You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Stick Together. This week's show was produced on the lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respect to their elders both past and present and recognise the ongoing impacts of colonisation across the country. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Stick Together is a weekly national union show that focuses on union news, workers' stories and social justice. Produced in Melbourne and broadcast across the community radio network. Also, you can listen wherever you normally listen to podcasts. I'm your host of this week's show, James Brennan, and on today's show, we're looking back at Australia's worst industrial disaster, the Westgate Bridge collapse. This show is produced with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation, and we thank them for their ongoing support. Now, for this week's union news, let's look around the country at where workers are standing up and fighting back. We start in Townsville, where members of the services union at Townsville City Council have been taking action after being offered just an 11% pay rise, well below the 18% and 21% offered to other groups of workers at the same council. Despite being threatened with a 48-hour lockout, union members rallied outside council building last week. The Australian Workers' Union backed them in, calling the council actions inflammatory and unnecessary. Across to South Australia, where nurses and midwives are on the move, members of the Australian Nurses and Midwifery Federation rallied outside the Royal Adelaide Hospital, kicking off a series of lunchtime stop work meetings. They've rejected the government's offer of 13% over 4 years, pointing out that doctors and allied health staff have done better in their recent bargaining. The union says it's waiting for a revised and respectful offer by next week. In Queensland, it's been a big week for action across multiple sites. At Repco's distribution centre, United Workers Union members held their first ever strike in Queensland after management tried to lowball them with a subpar offer. Workers are demanding fair pay that matches what their counterparts at Supercheap Auto earn, about $5 or $6 more per hour. And at QBuild and the Department of Transport and Roads, ETU, CFMEU, AMW, PPTEU are fighting back against a government lockout. The dispute started over minor paperwork bans, but now it's raised serious safety concerns as skilled tradespeople are being replaced by untrained contractors. Workers are standing firm for a 36-hour week and an 8% pay increase over 3 years. Back to South Australia, and firefighters are ramping up their Fair Go for Fireys campaign. UFU members have rejected the government's latest offer after 13 months of negotiations. They've begun industrial action, wearing union shirts on shift, refusing to charge for alarms and working for a better deal. If things don't start to move, stage 3 of their campaign will kick off next week. In New South Wales, Schindler Lifts workers are entering their third day of indefinite stoppages. Members of the AMWU and ETU are holding out for 6% annual pay increases, better job security and improved conditions, but the company still refuses to negotiate. Also in New South Wales, public sector nurses and midwives have accepted an interim offer of a 3% increase backdated to July 1. The deal also includes higher night shift penalties and better rostering protections. But the New South Wales Nurses and Midwives Association will continue to keep up their pursuit for a claim of a 35% pay rise through the Industrial Relations Commission later this month. In Victoria, UWU members at Fonterra's Bayswater site have launched rolling strikes after 6 months of negotiations. Workers are demanding better redundancy entitlements and safety protections, especially as the site's new owner pay less than other Fonterra locations. Also in Victoria, security guards at Casey Hospital walked off the job for 3 days after MSS Security refused to pay them during limited work bans. When the guards stood firm, management was left scrambling to cover shifts. Workers have since returned and are demanding equal pay with security at other Monash health sites. In Queensland, Transport Workers Union members at DHL are continuing their fight for better pay, $33 an hour to bring them in line with interstate colleagues. DHL has been refusing to budge since February, but the workers are continuing to hold strong. And finally, with the Community and Public Sector Union, the Democracy for CPSU faction has written an open letter to the union's leadership. They're calling for more transparency, stronger organising and a commitment to strike readiness. They've given leadership until the end of October to respond, ahead of the next union elections in 2020. 2026. And that's the latest from the picket lines and workplaces across the country, and solidarity with everyone that's taking action for fair pay, safety, and respect at work. If you know of an upcoming dispute, campaign, or workplace issue, get in touch with us here at Stick Together. We'd love to chat, share your story on Union News, or even do a longer interview with you as part of the show. This Wednesday, the 15th of October, marked the 55th anniversary of Australia's worst industrial disaster. The collapse of the Westgate Bridge, the bridge designed to run out of Melbourne to Geelong. 35 workers died in the collapse, and 18 were seriously injured as a result of the 1970 incident. But the design of the bridge was already in doubt beforehand, with a similar bridge having recently come down with worker deaths in the UK. Without the modern emergency service response, the workers were left to dig their comrades' bodies out of the rubble. 3 days later, they were all sacked. On the show today, we're going to hear an excerpt from the Creatures of the Industry podcast, a 3CR community radio project, and an oral history of those who made the building and construction industry in Melbourne since the 1960s. Here, survivor of the collapse and industry stalwart Pat Preston gives his first-hand account of the disaster and its aftermath, plus industry standards at the time, other near misses on the bridge, and the pay and conditions fought and won on that job. This extended interview features the voice of Peter Clark and Creatures of the Industry podcast host Ralph Edwards. You can find the full extended interview with Pat Preston, plus all episodes and stories over at 3cr.org.au/COTI.
You're listening to Stick Together, workers' stories and union news.
After all of this introduction to construction, where did you get onto your first really big job?
I think the Westgate, because most of the jobs I had lasted for, you know, a week or 2 or 3 months and something of that nature. The Westgate was really the big job, and I only got that by a fluke with a mate of mine who I used to drink with. Had got started there as a truck driver, actually. Brian Moore, a really great bloke. And sadly, he's no longer with us, but he says, come down with me. They want riggers on the job. Come down with me tomorrow morning. I'll introduce you. So, you know, down I went on the Spotswood side of the river, down by where the old golf course and the paper place was. It was a windy day when I got down there. There's all this black shit blowing around. I thought, well, where have I come from? It was like old sandy sort of filings from a foundry, you know, where they'd all been dumped down there.
So this was on the east or west side?
On the west side.
Spotswood side.
Yeah, Spotswood side. And I was, you know, it was okay, there until it came round to the actual physically erecting steel, and then I found, well, this is hard. Especially when there's just a couple of columns up and cables with turfers on holding those columns up to anchor points in the ground, and you was expected to climb those columns. I can remember a couple of the riggers there, the Paddy Hannaby, Benny Creaney. Paddy had just come over from the old country. Benny Creaney, I think he'd just come over from the old country. It was, you know, an Irish and Scotch crew. And, you know, there I was pretending to be a rigger, and they were real riggers. You know, they really knew what they were doing. And I remember watching Benny go up the column, and I thought, he's a monkey. You know, vroom, up there. So I tried copying him. So I got away with it for a while, I must admit that. Until Alex Brown had me walking along the steel with a turfer on my back. And there I am. Oh, that's a long way down. So, you know, that was the way it was in those
wind,
days.
And the wind was always blowing down there.
It was a windy, cold day, really cold place in the winter and stinking hot in the summer. But the spotty was down the road there for your counter lunches, so that got you through the day. There was Donny Fraser, a crane operator. And I've got to admit, an absolutely fantastic crane operator. And once we started getting out the ground and up, The quickest way to get up top, particularly when the concrete abutment there, the quickest way to get up top was ride the hook. That's how you got up to the top, because there was no walkway up to the top.
No walkway, no scaffold, no lifts.
Not at that time. So I learned how to ride the hook the hard way. You know, make sure your leg's straight, son. And unfortunately, Donnie, he left the job for a better job at those days, which was, if I remember rightly, Collins Place. And he came off the top of Collins Place, unfortunately, the hard way. But really, he was one of those real good operators.
And you had a couple of close misses down at Westgate, didn't you?
Yeah, well, they brought a six-ton Cranville crane down. And I think Alex, after teaching me a few lessons, like leave me on top of a column after being lifted up there in the crane and leave me sitting up there waiting to get down to teach me that this is height and this is how you work. And Alec Brown decided to put me on the Cranville. Well, I had no problem with that because I'd actually driven a similar machine in Chatham Dockyard in England, so I know what they were like. I got on the Cranville and, really going good. And then a union bloke come up from the other side of the river and said, what you are doing on that crane? You're in the wrong union. And it got stuck into me, so I had to go from the BLs to the FEDFA. Who was it? Garney Allen, that's right. He was driving a steam derrick, one of the old-fashioned steam derricks, coal-fire derrick in the casting yard on the east side. So I got on, and I was doing okay for a year or so into the crane, all over the place, lifting a load here, there, and so on. But one of the jobs I had was when they moved the gantry, they had these big steel columns. The gantry, what would it be about 100 feet up, something like that. Yeah,
And the derrick sat on the gantry.
Yeah, and you had the gantry and then a small steel-wheeled derrick. One of the jobs was to move those columns. When we moved the gantry, you had to take the columns down because that was supporting the concrete units as well as the gantry, take the weight. They were really hefty. I think they would be somewhere around 10 tonnes, something like that, if I remember. Big circular columns.
Stretching the old Cranville.
Yeah, it was a double lift with a winch on top to keep the weight of the columns when they released the bolts, and for the Clark's hydraulic crane to take the weight. So as they released the bolts, the Clark is supposed to take the load or the most of the load, and I would have part the load at the base. And the idea was to, as Clarkie lowered down, I would be towing it out, take the weight and towing it out. Well, we'd done a few of them like that. Unfortunately, this time somebody stuffed up inside the concrete box. And I know it was, but I won't mention the name, but we abused him afterwards. But released the bolts before Clarkie had the weight. So down come the column. Paddy Hannaby was actually dogging it at the time. Dogging the Cranville, and he screamed at me to get the hell out of here. Well, but not that sort of language. But he gave me such a fright, I jumped out the seat and run. But I think he jumped over the top of me, with his legs in the air. Down came the column on top of where I was sitting, so the crane was flattened right into the ground, and Clarkie's crane was pulled over as well. With a guy by the name of Cookie was operating that. So Paddy grabbed me, says, come on, and run me out all the way up to the spotty. So there we are, had a few sort of refreshments to get our nerves back again while they were looking for our bodies under the heap down on the site. But, that was a near miss. That really was. That was quite close. Actually, that was 12 months before the Westgate collapse. It was in October as well, so funny enough.
So such a large incident and no one got hurt at all?
No. Apart from we had to change our jeans, but we was okay. And there was often things happening. There was a 35-tonne hydraulic I ended up driving it in the end, but managed to work my way up from the Cranville to hydraulics and gantries and God knows what. But on the job, Theo was driving that and he put it over the side of the tip because the ground, and if you didn't have your outriggers well packed, you had that sort of thing. And we was always overlifting with the cranes. In those days, there was a lot of overlifting. You know, it wasn't unusual to lift over the front, which is a no-no with hydraulics, but you jacked up the chassis with timbers, and there's a lot used to happen. That was before crane certification come in. But I was actually on a job with the Cranville when the collapse happened, actually. Yeah.
So what on that particular day, where were you in proximity to the collapse?
I was down at the base of the column on Hyde Street. I'd just dropped a load, actually, on the way down to some brickies who were doing some block work for a pumping station. I had a chat with them and then made my way down because Paddy, who was a leading hand rigger on the top, wanted me down there just before 12, and I knew why. It was to give him a quick exit up the road. So there I am. There, about half an hour before, I'd watched Ian Miller go up, the engineer, Holland's engineer. So I tried to make myself look busy, you know, when he went up. And yeah, I'm standing down at the side of the crane, looking up. Paddy's up the top. He's talking to a young apprentice carpenter, Ross, and Ian Miller, and I think it was Tony Dimitri, one of the riggers. They were on the walkway to having a chat. Lift went up and Paddy made a run for the lift and a couple of the others and left Ross and Ian Miller on the walkway. And just as all hell broke loose, the noise up there, and at first I thought it was something just coming off the side of the bridge, because I was down under there one time when a ship bucket came down, because that's before we won proper toilets up there. But you know, it wasn't unusual somebody had packed the shits and over it, that kind of, you know, just in my mind I thought, they're throwing the fucking thing over again. But then the noise all, you know, calm, and I'm looking up and shit, there it was. It was on the way down, and Eddie Halsall, another rigger who had actually just come down on the lift, he sort of whooshed past me like a rush of air, and he just like flew through the air into the mesh fence behind us. And I'm hiding behind the counterweight of the crane and the rear wheels. You know, I just run behind there. So, a few of the guys just landed from the walkway in front of me. Well, Ian Miller landed in front of me and Ross landed in the swamp. So it was, you know, just one of those, it was one of those days where you never forget. You know, and then, of course, adrenaline kicks in and then you run in and do things that you would never, ever have thought about doing, but you do them. And being a skinny little bastard as I was at the time, one of the leading hands got me to try to crawl under one of the boxes, which was slightly in the swamp and slightly flattened down, because and that was an hour or two after the collapse, because the first aid shed was just under there. I wanted to see if anybody had survived there. Well, I got a little way under it, but I couldn't get any further. And they had to pull me out by my feet because you couldn't get back. So I haven't forgotten that. It's no. Something that's imprinted in you. It's there in your mind forever, you know.
You weren't claustrophobic, were you? You are now.
I am now, mate.
I'm assuming there was no safety management plan or no rescue procedures
in place? We had blues for all sorts of things up to that time. And there's all sorts of things won because we was getting organised. You know, we'd like organisers coming down. Marco Madison was one of them.
Yeah.
He was a regular visitor to us, and there was a lot of things won. But safety-wise, even though we'd had meetings about it and things were improving to what they used to be, there's still a lot to be desired, you know. Simple little things. For example, you know, it's around the traps nowadays, and for, you know, for years, people have been able to get safety footwear, overalls, shirts, strides, you know, workwear, bluey jackets. Well, we blued for everything of that on that job. We blued for overalls. We blued for safety footwear. And the Bluey Jackets, we had one hell of a blue for them. And what did John Hollands do? They went to the surface store and bought ex-service Bluey-type battle dress tops and issued them out. And they were giving us the nickname John Hollands Fusiliers. That's, you can imagine. But coming from there, we actually got the Tasmanian Bluey Jackets, because that was one. The Blues had to be Australian Tasmanian jackets. So, you know, there's a lot of wins on that job.
Yeah, well, I got to say, I was on the Southeastern Purification Plant in the early 70s, and there was a flow-on of all those benefits to other big jobs. I don't think people quite appreciate the impact the Westgate had on pay, conditions, everything.
Oh, tea and coffee. That was a blue.
Yeah.
And then milk. I mean, once we started back after the collapse, milk was a blue. And, you know, then it was the job was split east and west sort of thing. But the whole job blued for milk, you know, it's, instead of, you know, you like to be the milk in your coffee. And so it was negotiated a milk allowance. And it was the responsibility of the site committee to organise the delivery of milk. And the Peggies would, you know, organise that. And that milk allowance grew into quite a sizeable amount of money in the end. Of course, we had a committee meeting, you know, to decide what to do with it, and took it to a mass meet. And it was decided that any money over from that milk allowance we would use for the benefit of people, you know, such as a bed in the Altona Hospital or Williamstown Hospital. We even purchased a breastfeeding machine thing for kids in the maternity hospital. Mm. All coming out the milk, you know, it became a good fundraiser for little things around. So we used it properly, but what was surplus, you weren't going to give it back, was you?
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Stick Together, and thanks to Pat Preston, Peter Clark and Ralph Edwards for the audio that we used in today's show. Today's a great episode to be reminded of why we need unions and to support workers and demand safety at work, because every worker deserves to come home safely. Today and after this episode is first broadcast in Melbourne on Wednesday morning, families and supporters will gather in a yearly memorial organised by the Westgate Bridge Memorial Committee under the bridge on Douglas Parade in Spotswood. If you want to listen back to any other episodes of Stick Together, you can check out the 3CR website or wherever you normally listen to podcasts. I've been your host, James, and thanks for listening to this week's episode. The show was produced with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation, and we thank them for their ongoing support. To get in touch with the producers, you can contact us at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com. And remember, wherever you are and whatever you do, there's a union for you. Until next time, stick together. And to finish today's show, I'm going to hear a song, Mark Seymour, Westgate. Until next time, stick together.
You should have heard her when she came down. The wind blew me over the wire. And the cold wind blows down by the river where nobody goes. Hell broke free when the bridge came down. When the bridge came down. Job that day, well, they swore blue murder she would never come down. I got away with six broken ribs. I'm the luckiest man around. And the cold wind blows Your wife and your kids goodbye, well you know you're gonna play to survive. Sometimes I lie awake at night and think about the ones who died, the riggers and the chippies and the boilermakers, the boys who had nowhere to hide. I think about how proud we were and how we got a bad job done. You gotta trust who you're.